friends. I'm Val.
I'm Courtney.
And I'm Lisa.
And this is My Perfect Romance.
Bow, chicka, bow, bow.
What about all of you?
Or how about my sweet love?
I think we all have a different idea about what romance is.
Well, what is the perfect romance?
Gosh, I don't know, but let's find out.
Do a podcast with Katya. Well, hello, you guys.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? Great. I am excited. We are doing a little bit different read. Typically, we like to do books that are fiction-based. Actually, always.
Yes.
But every once in a while, we've introduced a couple articles, you know, foods for thought.
Absolutely.
We like to talk about your real-life love stories or what would you do's. And this is kind of, this book is written by Lee Balcom. He has his PhD in marriage and family counseling. He knows his shit.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's on the lines of relationship and self-help books. And the title is How to Save Your Marriage in 3 Simple Steps. And he likes to emphasize simple doesn't mean easy. There's a big difference.
There's work. Absolutely.
And I love, I mean, he goes into the work that is required to save your marriage. Yeah. Don't confuse simple with easy. Because they're not the same thing.
No.
And he has a whole Save Your Marriage system. He has his own Save Your Marriage podcast. I really wanted to read his book because we are going to interview him.
Yes.
Coming up. And I kind of wanted to get a little bit more of his background. So How to Save Your Marriage focuses on repairing relationships, especially when couples feel disconnected, resentful, or stuck in unhealthy patterns, which I think any couple, if they've been together more than a few months, might already be feeling some of those things.
Yeah, very true.
And he emphasizes that lasting change in a marriage often begins with one person changing their own behaviors, communication style, and emotional responses rather than waiting for their partner to change first. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I love that because that puts the locus of control in your hands.
Exactly.
Instead of just waiting for change to happen, because we know that change happens, but it might not be what we want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The book encourages emotional accountability, rebuilding connection through small, consistent actions, improving communication, reducing blame, and creating emotional safety in a relationship. It is especially geared towards couples who feel emotionally distant or are on the verge of separation.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which I really like. I think it makes a lot of sense. When he goes through it, he basically starts off just talking about how couples slowly drift apart through, you know, not intentional patterns. It's just that he goes through kind of like the dismissal. You start putting other things ahead of the relationship, you know, and how that slowly compounds. The me before we completely happens. And as you go through that, you keep moving farther away from the relationship and you gain a momentum because he brings up the point that relationships are always going one direction. Either they're growing or they're shrinking.
Yeah. There's that emotional disconnection that happens.
Exactly. Yeah. So I really like how he talks about how it's not a conscious decision that most people make to start neglecting their relationship, but it's a common thing for people to do that after they get through the initial part of the relationship. They move on to tackle other things with a lot of vigor, and they start neglecting their relationships.
Yeah.
And so he encourages people to stop trying to, focusing on, I'm going to change my spouse. Maybe this spouse isn't the right spouse for me, and he starts saying, instead of thinking maybe you picked the wrong partner, you should think about maybe you picked the wrong pattern to follow, or that you have stopped focusing on your partner. Mm-hmm. And I really like how he kind of, because he says when you take that mindset and you start shifting it to focusing again on your partner and the relationship and prioritizing that and improving your communication and rebuilding trust that your partner is your point of connection and your partner is your priority, like it is in the beginning of a relationship, not taking that for granted, that really improves the dynamic of the relationship. Now, he's not talking about abusive relationships here. So I think that that's something that's important to point out here. He's not saying
he wants to. It's safety is first.
Yes, absolutely.
You're not safe in a relationship. You don't want to be saving that.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So he's when a lot of his points kind of are along like one person can make a big difference in changing the momentum of a relationship and in kind of like saving the marriage. But a big caveat here, you do not stay in an abusive marriage. One person cannot do anything to overcome another partner being abusive. So you have to understand in this, I think that a lot of women especially will think that you could do more to change it. And that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about normal relationships that start moving away from each other because they're not focusing on each other anymore. And recreating the momentum towards each other again instead of away from each other in a normal relationship, not an unhealthy one. And there he talks about how readers can start showing their love through actions and how to encourage more patience and empathy and realizing that the growing apart process happens slowly generally and to not have an expectation for that to change overnight.
Yeah, it takes time to rebuild trust.
Well, also along the lines of what you said earlier, Valerie, is that, you know, if you are somebody who's putting a lot of time and effort into a relationship and not getting anything back, that's a indication that, you know, maybe this is not a relationship that's going to manifest into a better one. You know, it's going to maybe just take a really hard look at your partner and the relationship you have.
There's a lot of opportunities and, you know, it brings up a lot of good questions and just reading through this book.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's some things to think about. I mean, do you think one person really can change the direction of a marriage? I mean, you know, it's like I just said, it takes two. Mm-hmm. I mean, and Lee Balcom talks about like it, maybe one person initiates change, does these things, you know, some simple steps to move in a direction. But if the person that you're with isn't moving in a direction, receiving those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then, you know, that's a...
Right. I think he does a really good job of pointing this out. So I think your question, can one person really change a marriage? Yes, they can. But they also don't have control over whether or not that other person is willing to change. But it takes somebody to start and initiate a change if change is going to happen. Because if nothing changes, nothing changes, right? Somebody's got to be the one.
And
why not you?
And I like how when he's going through it, he's more... A lot of the time when we try to change our relationships one-sided, we do it through shaming
and fear.
And then we also sometimes a lot of the times people will think grand gestures. And he's like, that's not what this is about. This is about eliminating fear in relationships through consistency and reprioritizing your partner.
Well, it's about emotionally connecting with your partner.
Yes.
Because if you're so disconnected that all you know how to function is on the day-to-day, like, routines. Mm-hmm. And you're not emotionally connected. It's hard to want to care about changing or to take that into account. And it takes small steps to rebuild an emotional connection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at what point does working on yourself become enabling bad behavior?
That's a really good question.
I don't think it's ever bad to work on yourself.
No,
just because you are working on yourself and making yourself the best version you can possibly be, it doesn't mean that you're enabling anyone to be better or worse, but it might give you the strength, the courage, or maybe even the financial ability to walk away from something that's not serving either of you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's ever a bad thing to work on yourself. Ever.
Yeah. I mean, that's bad behavior is the other person's problem. Yes,
that is on them.
Yeah.
We have no control over their shit.
I think that when people hear one person trying to save the marriage, I think that what they're trying to say is like, oh, I'm going to make everything okay for my partner. And I'm going to step in and, you know, like
that's a different
parent that fails, that won't let
their child
fail. That's not what we're talking about. That's not what he's talking about in one person making the momentum shift change in a relationship.
Yeah, but I can see, like, I think that question's a little tricky.
Yes.
Because at first glance, you might think, okay, I'm going to accommodate this to keep the peace in the house.
Yeah,
to
make and that's everything not what this is about.
And yeah, absolutely. If you're doing that, you are enabling mm-hmm. a bad situation. And I can tell you, I've been there trying to keep the peace and make things work.
Yeah.
And it's yes. draining and it doesn't help.
See, I think we all have been there. But
Yeah. And that's not what helped fix things. What
yeah.
Fix
and,
things
and in fact, yeah.
working on myself.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
refocusing on the relationship in healthy ways.
Yeah. Is emotional Absolutely. Safety more important than romance, you know?
Absolutely.
Kind of what we're talking about is like,
yeah,
if you have to be work on yourself.
Yeah.
Feel safe in who you are mm-hmm. and the decisions you're making and okay. what you're doing before romance can even happen.
Oh, if I don't feel safe with someone, I am not feeling very romantic towards them unless I've had a couple glasses of wine.
Then that's just like a whole bunch of other things going on in your head.
If you don't feel safe to yeah. reveal to somebody how you're feeling, which Lee Balcom talks about a lot about,
yeah.
you need to be able to have conversations about how you're feeling. You need mm-hmm. to be able to say, look, I love you and mm-hmm. I'm feeling frustrated because you left your shoes on the floor where we've talked about I trip on them or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever yes. it is, mm-hmm. you can't hold those feelings inside because it only creates resentment person.
And it's about the communication again, too. It's about learning to not be defensive when a partner says something like that. Don't go to deal about having the shoes out or, mm-hmm. oh, yeah. well, it's just pick them up. You know, it's not that big of a deal. Just pick them up, you know, instead mm-hmm. of hearing saying, oh, okay, I'll work well. On trying to put those away. I don't have enough shoes. I don't have enough closet space for my shoes. And maybe, you know, are you cool if this Saturday I build a shoe rack or, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to go ahead and buy a shoe rack off of that. Is it okay if I put it in this place? So starting to hear people.
Yeah. Not dismissing their feelings.
Discrediting.
And then can attraction come back after resentment builds? Because your resentment. First of all, you are not emotionally safe. Therefore, you don't talk about what's bothering you. And then you create resentment.
I don't think you can bring attraction back unless you rebuild emotional connection.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't think you can find someone attractive.
So all those things need to be
unless you get a couple
first.
Glasses of wine.
I mean, but that's physical. You don't want to be around somebody that's hurtful and dismissive and disrespectful.
Oh, no. No amount of makeup.
Boob jobs is going to fix that.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know. What do guys do to make themselves? No amount of like pumping iron is going to make me like you more if you're a total asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So first of all, yes, yeah. you need to feel emotionally safe to discuss things with your partner.
Yeah.
And in doing that, you will start feeling romantic chemistry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you will be starting to want to be intimate. Those things don't happen until you can trust somebody and start mm-hmm. talking to them about your true feelings and emotions.
And I really they gave a lot of good examples in this book about how to rebuild. He talked about different types of connection, whether it be physical, mm-hmm. emotional, spiritual. I think those were kind of the basic three that he talked about. But just like after you've been disconnected and rebuilding connection, like you can't just like love bomb someone, expect that
yes.
to just automatically. It actually feels scary, foreign, and threatening when somebody like goes all in like that. It takes time and it takes little acts.
Mm-hmm.
It might be, you know, if you haven't been physically intimate for a while, that doesn't mean you jump in the sack and start banging each other. Or if you've been emotionally distant, it might mean that when they're sharing something about their day, they might not say to you exactly like, oh, this was really hard for me, but mm-hmm. you're listening to what they're saying and you're empathizing with them and you might be reading between the lines. You're not carrying the emotional weight trying to fix it, but just saying, gosh, that sounds really exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then follow-up question.
Yeah. It's things like that. Or you know what? I really was thinking about something today and I'm really excited about this. You know, just sharing bits of yourself, being willing to be open.
Yeah.
But you can't you can't like hit it all at once. I really loved that that was emphasized.
Yeah. Well, even with like you meet somebody, you just know them on a general basis. But the more you get to know them, the more you like them because they've got a great personality. Yeah. They're nice. They're caring. And the more you know them, the more you like them, the more they feel they seem physically attractive. I mean, you could meet someone that's physically attractive and they're horrible people and there is no like chemistry there. You're absolutely. Oh, I never kiss that person. And this goes with this too. You know, you are maybe kind of in a way getting to know your partner again, over again, and you're telling them your feelings and how, what you're thinking. And this can create like one of those things where like, oh, that's right. She's so attractive or he's so beautiful, you know, because he's telling me he loves me and he likes what I do here and he appreciates this. It does create attraction.
When someone sees you, there's nothing hotter than being seen and accepted.
Or even in somebody just saying, hey, you look great today. And I appreciated you cooking me dinner. And you're like, wow, goodness. Okay. And wow, look, you have good, you look really good in those jeans. Your bum is really cute. Oh.
That's so funny. That's a funny one for me. Yeah. I have a hard time just because it's just such an easy thing to say. I would need more subtlety than like,
oh, so well. When I tell you your ass looks good, you don't find me attracted because of that?
No.
Well, could it start small? Like, thank you for taking the garbage out.
Oh, so I blew it when I told you your rack is hot.
Yes, you blew it. I was like, what are you watching?
Too far, too soon.
Too much.
Too much. That. Oh, I have to tell you something funny. So, little Robert and Bob, because you know me, like, I'm like, I think I'm funny sometimes and I'm not. I know. Well, okay. You know. My viewpoint in life is like, if you're kind of outgoing and, you know, you're known for being quirky, one out of five of them is not going to hit well at all. It's going to be too far. It's going to be too off color.
Valerie, I love that you keep trying.
I know. It's uncomfortable for everyone. And so now.
But it lands.
And sometimes it's like a bird drop that just power washes everywhere. But no, but Robert and Bob, you know, they over spring break, it was really cute. They're like, they came up with this expression. They're like, too far, Val.
Oh.
So then it would be like when I would go and I'd be like, this went well. So, you know, like, oh, it's one funny thing. And then I'm like, I'm going to take it a little bit, you know, like, I'm like, oh, they thought that was funny. Well, they like it on speed. And then when I go too fast, or like too far, Val. So now that's like my new nickname.
Oh my gosh.
Too far, Val.
I mean, that almost sounds like a name. Too far.
Hello, I'm too far.
Well, let me ask you this. What actually makes people feel emotionally connected? You know, what is it? Is it just, I mean, certainly it's compliments. Like I said, you know, you can say like, hey, maybe it's even really revealing how you're feeling. I know it's scary sometimes to say, I love you. I love it when you say this or you do this.
I think there's just so many ways that we have bids for connection, whether it just be sharing a simple thing like an interest or something that you found interesting that day. And if somebody is on their phone and they don't take a minute to like look you in the eyes and say, oh yeah, right? That reaching for connection is just, you know,
what did the
that's
Gottman
a chance
say?
To disconnect when you're blown off like that. I think how many times do we reach out on a regular basis? I would guess in the hundreds, if not thousands of times, we are seeking connection. It's a constant. We're so social, but it's being present, seeing people and engaging with them. Like, sounds like it doesn't take a lot, but I just think there's so much noise in the world that we're losing that.
Didn't the Gottman say that the number one indicator of a marriage's survival is that when someone makes a bid for attention, the rate at which their partner
responds.
And don't you need to have like 8 out of 10 of your bids for attention responded to by your partner?
I mean, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I couldn't give you any numbers or any details around it, but I like it.
I just said
that was one of the ones, you know, like if you're like, oh, oh, try a bite of this. And they say, no. Or if you're like, oh, man, I ran into Sue at the grocery store today or whatever. And they don't say, oh, how is she? You know, so like when you make a bid for attention, or you're like, oh, could you grab the door for me? Or, oh, you know.
Yeah.
Or if someone comes up to put their arm on your, you know, their hand on your shoulder and you don't need to or whatever.
Did I just disconnect?
That was
for show.
Or if you tell a joke and then they're like, yeah. So
put downs, or I think a put down is like whatever multiplies the disconnection.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I think that what he's saying throughout this is a lot of the time people don't realize that in their relationship they've fallen into patterns where they're not necessarily being mean, but they're not being present with their partners.
And just doing the day-to-day routine, nothing to break up the monotony or...
Exactly.
Like,
so why do you think couples wait so long to address problems?
I mean, it's like any kind of a health... Like, okay, we don't go to our doctor for a problem until it is unbearable.
It's absolutely true.
Right? And I think it's the same way in relationships. Like, it has to get to a point that it's unbearable before we're willing to do anything about it.
But you know what?
It doesn't have to, but that's just what people tend to do.
We're just putting things off. Like, I'll talk about it later.
Yes.
I'll talk about it later. But then maybe that resentment starts building and building. And then it's harder and harder to actually address the problem.
And we might not recognize those initial symptoms. I think that's...
Well, especially like we get so absorbed. A lot of the time it's not that we're trying to be mean or dismissive. It's just that I'm really absorbed in this work project right now, or right now, you know, my friend's having crisis, or right now, you know, the kids are really just all the focus at the moment. And so we just are not looking at our partners, and it's not that we don't love them. It's just that we're not seeing their bids for attention. And then when you don't respond to people when they ask you for attention, then they stop asking you for attention because it hurts to be rejected. Rejection physically hurts. Yeah. And those micro rejections are bad. And so people also don't address the problem because we're lazy. And if you're the one who's ignoring your other partner's bid for attentions because you're just focused on what you want to do, you're not currently uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable, but you're not uncomfortable. So if they're just sucking it up and going along, getting along, you're still like, you know, having your needs met until you have distanced so much from them that they've cut off to you. And it has to get, if it gets that far because there hasn't been conversation to repair, then you're going to get to the point where it has to be big for it to be uncomfortable to the person who's actually started kind of the problem.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times it's easier to ignore something than to address, like you're saying, like an uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah.
So putting it off seems like, well, I don't want to be having that conversation today. I'll wait till tomorrow.
Or if we're having a good moment, we haven't had any good moments for so long. I don't want to ruin this good moment because we're good moment starved by bringing up the topic we're avoiding.
Yeah. And do you think are most arguments really about the thing people are arguing about?
No.
Because don't you feel like something happens and then it's a slew of other things? And then you get to bring up the shoes out. And you also forget to take the garbage out. And also, some little thing triggers something, but then there's a million other things that are brought up.
I mean, it's like anger is our first emotion, you know? But it really is masking maybe some hurt, some jealousy, something.
I have a bad habit of sometimes snowballing. I call it, you know, like sometimes I'll be like, by the time I get to the point where I'm finally like saying something, I'm all like, no, we can't do this because if this happens, that's just like this and that's just like this. And that's that thing that I keep telling you that this is another example of that thing that I'm telling you over and over and over again that I don't like.
Every petty, if it's brought up, like then you start to feel like an egg.
Exactly.
And so it's like, where do you find that balance?
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe, and I don't think he necessarily talks about this at all in his book. But I just kind of feel like having time set aside, like, cause sometimes you hit somebody up like, this really bothered me. And like, not every little battle needs to be a war, you know? And so sometimes it's not, the other person might not be in a good headspace to talk about it.
That's a good point.
And so you don't want to wait too long, and yet you don't want to like bombard somebody. It's tricky to find a middle ground. I know when we are on our downward spiral of the roller coaster we call relationships, always make a goal to say, okay, we're going to do some regular check-ins. Mm-hmm. And we are really, really, really good about it. And when we do that, or even just even going on consistent walks.
That's true.
That's why dogs are great.
Yeah.
Dogs are great because they force you to go on walks regularly. And when you go on walks, then it's like a nice time to just kind of go over things for the day and just kind of know that like you can bring things up and like hash things out or just share things that excite you or whatever. I think having something like that established in everyday part so you can connect is really important for the longevity of relationships.
Let me ask you this, and this isn't brought up on the book or anything, but what on that same note, I'm trying to figure out a good time to bring things up sometimes with boss. And so like at dinner, I kind of, that's like
is dinner as soon as he gets home from work?
Well, usually it's like 15 minutes after he gets home from work. It's like he comes home and he changes his clothes. And then I, because I never know when he's going to show up. So like I have things prepped, but then I need to be like, okay, now I'm going to do this, you know, the final, whatever it is so that I can plate it all fresh and nice and yummy.
Okay. That's so sweet.
I'm weird that way.
You are sweet. Amazing.
She's an amazing wife.
No, you guys say that, but then if Bob like has the audacity to like take a long duke or something like that, I'm like, it's on the table, it's getting cold. And I'm like, no, I just did this and I did it just like this. So it'd be perfect temperature.
I would just be like, you know what? You can turtle all through the bill. Prairie dog it. I don't care. Whatever you want to call it.
I'm mortified. I'm like,
just hold on
I'm
to
like,
that.
Like, seriously? Yeah. Like, you eat. I just finished that steak. So it'd be, and it, you know, like, and then you, I'm like, no. I mean, I'm ridiculous. So I'm terrible like that. My question is this, like, I like to have, like, that's like our only good, sweet time of the day. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say it. And so I don't know that we have, you know, a regular, but I like to save that time for us to like, that's when we get to, you know, just share our day, talk about our hearts and stuff. Like, I feel like sometimes that's too heavy. Bob and I had always talked about that we were going to try to do weekly check-ins.
Yeah.
But it's hard for us to get it. We still haven't been good at getting done.
I think the trick is you have to connect before you communicate.
Yeah.
So if it's been a stressful day for either or both of you, and then the first bit of communication is a bombardment of things and you haven't had the chance to connect first, then you're going to be met with defensiveness.
I mean, and is defensiveness the biggest relationship killer?
I think so. I think it's in normal people relationships. I'm not talking about abusive relationships. But in normal people relationships,
normal,
I think
whatever that is,
defensiveness is probably one of the biggest, because instead of hearing our partners, we are feeling attacked. Mm-hmm. And when a partner comes to you and says, I have a problem with something, and they're not like being abusive to you, but you know, when your partner, when they, you know, your response is to learn about their problem because they're the one who just brought it up. It's not to defend yourself. It's not to tell them why they're wrong for having that feeling or that problem. It's to learn about their problem and then to connect with them over their problem. And then you can bring up your problems at another time.
Yeah. I think of defensiveness, like if someone's being defensive, that means that someone's being offensive. If you're on the same team, you can't have that dynamic. Right?
Really? I don't know.
Not when you're, if you're playing on the same team toward a common goal of winning, I'm thinking sports, right?
Yeah.
And you have someone that's being defensive and someone that's being offensive. Like, I guess, does that work?
So
or do you have to be able to like coordinate how to work together and play at each other's strengths?
Well, I think you play each other's strengths, but I'm a little confused on that because so let's say the issue comes up. You're like, hey, listen, today it's important to me that we keep the bedroom clean. It just helps me get in my headspace, and it helps me stay focused, because if it's not clean, then I'll scatter that way and I'll start taking care of that, and it throws off my patterns. So it really helps me.
Connected emotionally first, and you come to me and say that, all I hear is, I'm not good enough. I can't keep things the way you like them. And I go into immediately defense.
Yeah. So yeah. if you have your conversation, like you keep your dinner nice and pleasant, and then you have your dog walk time, which is your talk time. And on the dog walk, you would bring that up. If I'm approaching you like that, this is, hey, listen, this is a need I have. This is why I have this need.
Well, it depends on how your dog walk time goes. Sure. Depends on how, like, you really need to show up for each other before you.
First of all, we'll go back to some mm-hmm. of those other things we talked about, is you need to be comfortable with yourself. Because if you're not comfortable with yourself and how you feel, then a lot of the things your partner says to you, even though it's not, even though they're not attacking you, you will hear it as attacking.
Yeah. So when,
and you will be defensive always. And then then your partner will feel like, wow, I can't say anything to them without turning into fight because they're constantly defensive.
That's a good point.
So that's what I'm wondering is, I don't think that if someone's being defensive, that necessarily someone's being offensive towards them.
Well, do you think love can survive without admiration and respect, you know?
No,
absolutely not.
I don't think so either. And, you know, how much responsibility should one partner carry in saving a marriage?
I mean, you've got to both show up.
Yes.
One person can't do it all. Maybe it takes one person to initiate it.
Yeah.
But if the other person's not willing to try in any way, shape, or form, there's nothing that you can do.
It's kind of a game of...
Except for, I will say, though, to try is never a bad thing.
No.
Because you can walk away and say, I did everything that I could.
Yeah.
I did the best that I could. You know what? They might be doing the best they could, too, but they aren't wanting to change. And that's... Yeah.
Well, and it's recognizing, too, like standing back and saying, wow, I'm carrying this relationship. I'm doing everything and I'm not getting anything in return. Mm-hmm. That's really a hard place to be too, because I think a lot of people get so in the motion of doing that mm-hmm. it is hard to step back and say, like, what I'm doing everything and not getting and not receiving anything. So
do you think though that there's times in your relationship that you're going to be the one carrying it more?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
And other times that you're going to be carrying it less?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I think that the point is like, when do you say, I'm consistently carrying this? Because yes, and it's a game of tag almost, really, right? You're like, I'm doing, and then the other person's like, okay, I'm going to do now. And then I'm going to do, and then I'm going to do. And it's, you keep helping each other out. Sometimes it's longer periods of time. Like I'm having problems at work that are, there's like, I don't know when this is going to end.
Yeah.
And your partner is there for you. But then you understand, the partner does. It's like, yes, but the last time I was having a problem, they were there for me. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a give and take. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there's no one person should be responsible for carrying a marriage. And then do you think, is forgiveness a feeling or a decision?
Both.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I think you're right, Valerie.
Feeling.
Is forgiveness a feeling?
Yes, it's definitely a decision. Yes. I can see it being a decision. You absolutely have to choose. And it's not so much that it has anything to do with the other person. It's about giving yourself the freedom
mm-hmm. to move on.
To move on and to open up to love and trust again. And holding on to resentment and anger is going to keep you in negative cycles.
Yes.
And you're not going to be able to move forward. So it's definitely a decision.
Yeah.
And it feels good to let go of hurt.
It does. Well, and you can also feel it too, because suddenly you're released of some of those mm-hmm. negative feelings. You're suddenly it's gone. You're like, oh, okay. I think I'm over that. And you know what happens when only one person wants to grow though? You know, it's like it's over, really. You know, if only one person wants it, we go back to like carrying the marriage. It's like,
I have to say, if you were on a growth trajectory, and I liked how he put this, like that's actually really attractive. people are attracted to growth. People are attracted to positivity. And so, you know, if you are growing and your spouse doesn't find that attractive, well, someone else will. You know what I mean? Yeah. They will. And I guess you could decide what you want to do with that.
Well, do people fall out of love or do they stop nurturing connection?
I think usually they stop nurturing connection leads into falling out of love.
And I loved the plant analogy that he used.
Yeah.
Yes, I do too.
You have all these great intentions of making this beautiful garden and planting it in the first couple days or weeks. I'm so guilty of this.
Me too.
I just planted so many plants and I watered them twice. And I'm like, hey, hun, you've been watering those plants? Thank God he has. Because I'm like, I kind of already moved on. That's so terrible.
You know, at least
thank God he picked it up. Because I was like, brilliant. I was really excited about them.
I edged in and got a whole bunch of extra sod from, you know, edging the things, which was good because we put in a little concrete area and we lost some grass. So. Yeah. At least you watered it in. I was so lazy. I just took the edging cuttings and went and just like stomped them in the ground. And I'm like, the sprinklers will get it tomorrow. It's fine.
I don't know how sprinklers set up for the
I was just like, yeah. So I haven't even looked at it. That was like 4 days ago. It's probably like half of them are dead.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So what do you think of the
Not too late to water them now. Sorry.
Yeah.
Maybe well, it might be by the time I get there this weekend.
So what do you think of the idea that change starts with one person?
I think that's very legit. Somebody has to initiate the ball.
I mean, awesome if it happens at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But usually it doesn't.
I don't think it does.
Because usually what has happened is
one person's been carrying it for so long.
Yeah. And either they snap
or
they've given up. And they've gone to a quiet period to where the other person is now starting to feel uncomfortable. So people don't change until they're uncomfortable.
Yeah, sometimes too, I think it can be where you are moving along in life and suddenly you see that your partner is, you don't know them anymore.
Yeah.
You don't do anything together. You never talk.
You haven't been watering your garden.
No, you just have kind of you both have fallen into different patterns in life. And so if you see that and you're kind of disconnected and maybe wanting that connection again, suddenly it's like you wake up and you say, wow, what kind of relationship am I in? I miss the connection we had. I want to do something about it. That's when the change starts. Yeah. Was the book too optimistic about saving marriages?
I think so. I mean, I think there was a lot of recommendations and suggestions, but I felt like on the outset, it felt like he really tried to make it clear that there are no guarantees. But this is absolutely true. The one guarantee is if you do nothing,
Yes,
you're
guaranteed
to fail. So that is a guarantee, but at least doing something, there's a chance.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so what advice in the book would actually be hardest to apply in your life?
I think where people make the biggest mistake is we think it's okay to pause our relationships. And, you know, we'll pause the relationship just for right now while I'm getting through this thing. And the habit of pausing the relationship and thinking that you are still going to feel like a priority in a relationship where you get paused all the time.
Yeah. I felt the thing that struck a chord with me the most, I think, he talked a lot about mindset. And and this is not just in relationships. I'm just thinking of like so many times because in healthcare all day, every day, I'm trying to help people get back on track with their health. And a lot of that starts with your mental state, whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're right. You know, and just this all around thinking, like people tend to say, I can't do that. And then they don't challenge that belief. They actually believe their thoughts.
Yeah.
When that's all it is, it's just a thought.
Yeah.
And it's just such an automatic thing. People don't stop to question that belief, even if the belief is totally false. And so I think, you know, like, oh, that'll never change. Or I can't do anything about that. Or they're always doing this. Mm-hmm. Like, none of those statements are true. Those are all or none. And that mental, like, when that's your attitude about things, like, gosh, are you really considering the possibility of change? Not really. You're just being dismissive. And then you don't really have to do anything. Like,
yeah,
I think that takes the onus away from you. Any responsibility. True. And it's just total cop out. But it's what people do. And
people
I see
totally
it
do that
nonstop. And I want to just say, let's challenge that belief.
Well, I think people will automatically go to, it's just not possible. Or
yeah.
And then they'll use the thing, well, you just don't understand everything. Or
right.
You just don't understand my world.
Well, this is different
this
from
is,
you.
It's, yes.
And when you do challenge it, and I liked how you pointed out, like, okay, when you're thinking in this all or none, why don't you challenge it with the opposite thought?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see, is that possibly true? But it takes then the next step is like, it is, which means I do need to do something, which means now I am responsible for that. And I think that's what people get stuck in, is just saying, I don't want to have to be responsible. I'd rather blame other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, so did you think it focused enough on intimacy and attraction or mostly communication?
It was emotional connection. Emotional emphasis.
Connection. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think those two go together.
Yes, I agree.
But if you don't emotionally connect, mm-hmm. communication doesn't go as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and who would benefit from reading this book?
Oh, everyone.
Honestly, I mean, this was written towards saving marriages, but I, as a therapist, I was like, I'm going to use this opposite thinking. I'm going to try that. Help try to reframe people's, you know, I can't. I really liked it just for that. Just that.
One
let's
dip.
Get into a positive mindset of mm-hmm. change. I really liked it. I really liked that. And that had nothing to do with relationships.
But it's how you engage with life.
It is. It yeah. is how you engage with life. For sure. Or your own life. Or your own sense of responsibility or ownership in things. I loved it for that.
Yeah, me too.
A really good chapter on that. I think if you are seeking a relationship, maybe you're not in a relationship, maybe it's kind of like, hey, maybe think about the importance of watering your garden. Yeah. We all want to, you know, maybe we all look at, we want a garden someday, but like, hey, you can't put off. Maybe going into a long-term relationship with that mindset can be useful.
Yeah.
Even if you're not in one right now.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah. So I thought it was great.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that this is advice that we can just wrap up in a nice bubble of be aware that you have responsibilities to prioritize your partners mm-hmm. and be aware that someone needs to take the initiation to change the momentum of a relationship course mm-hmm. and be aware that it is going to take time mm-hmm. to bring a relationship back from discord, and that it's going to require a lot of consistency, and small consistent actions work way better than big
grand gestures.
Yeah. And that there is, it's much better to take and approach everything with a positive mm-hmm. out. And yeah, just a good attitude. I think there was a lot of practical things in the yeah. book too. So I really think it's a good read for everyone.
It is. Yeah. It's simple. It's quick. It's mm-hmm. practical. It's actionable.
Yeah.
It's a great read.
It's a blueprint too.
Yeah. And it also, and if it's like, if it doesn't feel comprehensive or specific enough, it like at least gives you guidance towards like, hey, there's a system in place.
Yes.
There are resources. And so I really liked that aspect of it too. And yeah. even just listening to his podcast, because I've listened to a couple of those.
Yeah. Those are great.
They're
really
always
like.
Informative. Yeah.
They're super informative. And yeah. gives it, and I really like his podcast. I'd say start yeah. with his podcast and get his book, because his podcasts are like 10 to 25 minute gems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Little gems.
Yeah.
Little
yeah.
nuggets.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, I think Lee Balcom really does a great job.
Me too.
I do too.
I love what he's doing.
Thanks for that recap, Val. And if you'd like to reach out to us to tell us about your book, request a book or movie review, to ask us what would you do, or to tell us your real life love story, you can reach us at www.myperfectromance.com, where you'll also find links to all of our socials as well.
Nice. Then, yeah, coming up, we're going to be reviewing the mini series Heated Rivalry. Woo-hoo! I know, starting Connor's story and Hudson Williams. I mean, who hasn't heard about this yet?
Right.
What rock are you under? We're going to review the book, Call Me By Your Name by Andre Osman, which is a great read, and answering some of your what would you do. So
yeah, until then, keep believing in the perfect version of your own romance. I'm Val.
I'm Courtney.
And I'm Lisa.
And this has been My Perfect Romance.
Happy romancing, everyone.
Hope so.